potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Hustlers, The Goldfinch, Empathy Incorporated, and Tigers Are Not Afraid. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Aladdin and The Dead Don't Die. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news I want to talk about this week actually happened this past weekend, and it was at the Venice Film Festival, and the movie Joker, starring Joaquin Phoenix, directed by Todd Phillips, won the Golden Lion, and that's like the best of the festival, for those who don't know what that is. Now, a lot of people think, oh, it's the Venice Film Festival, who cares, it's overseas, you know, I mean, a lot of people, you know, kind of in my position, you know, the an American who really doesn't do much traveling to Europe or anything like that, they don't realize how significant it is that this movie won. Because these movies that win these film festivals or get highlighted, particularly at a festival like Venice, are not always American Hollywood movies. So not only is that at least notable, because like the second best prize went to a Roman Polanski movie that probably won't get much play here in America, but it's the first time any sort of comic book movie has won that level of prestige. I mean, of course, yeah, you had The Dark Knight and Heath Ledger's performance, that got a lot of notoriety. And sure, the Avengers movies have become blockbusters and well-regarded as quality pieces of, you know, pop culture. But Joker winning the Golden Lion, then you don't see that sort of thing happening with and I'm not going to call it a superhero movie unless Batman shows up at the end and beats everybody up. It's not a superhero movie. It's a comic book movie at the very least. You know, the Joker has always been a rich character and has always made for great characterization in movies, but I think that that's an interesting thing to note. So keep your eye on that one. That's going to be coming out in just a couple weeks here stateside. The other piece of news, it's not really news. It's one of those news stories where it's really just covering something that some actor said that people think is interesting or fits the narrative that they want to run. And that is Pierce Brosnan has come out and said that he thinks it's time for a female James Bond. And of course, that gets everybody talking. And here's why I think that's stupid. And here's why I don't think that would work. I don't mind if you have a character that can gender swap relatively simply. I mean, look at like Doctor Who. When they got a female Doctor Who, when Jodie Whittaker took over, I mean, that character is set up that they change the look of the character. Literally, he changes to a different person each time he regenerates. And they just sort of tweaked retconning the mythology and said, oh, well, you can turn it. Why not a woman? But or even like if you look at like Thor, you know, in Thor Love and Thunder, they're giving Natalie Portman the title of Thor. She's going to be playing that character. Well, she's not taking over the character that Chris Hemsworth played. She's just becoming the new Thor. She's becoming the new god or goddess of thunder. And that makes sense because the character that we've known from Thor in the movies has kind of gone through his own changes and his own arcs, and he's going off to do his own thing. That doesn't mean that she replaces him. She just gets his mantle, so to speak. She gets his hammer. Now, the reason James Bond, I don't think that would work as a female is this is not like the same discussion of let's have a black James Bond. Cause I don't care. Ultimately, I don't want anyone casting James Bond based on some box you can tick on a demographics form. I want you to pick the best performer to play James Bond. If it's Idris Elba, good. Great. I think he'd make a fantastic James Bond. But I don't think a woman would work, and I don't think a woman should work. And that's because, I mean, the character of James Bond is so steeped in that sort of the masculinity that you would either have to change it to make the character, you'd have to change the name for crying out loud. Why do you need to change that character? Why don't you just have another 00 agent and give that, like, tell the story of 008, and that 008 is a woman, and make a whole new movie based on this, and fine, do it up. Gender flip all that. Make all the people that she runs into are these good-looking men that are half-clothed, and she's going and sleeping around with them and doing these great things and just kind of running her own thing. And don't even have James Bond in that movie, but give it to this female 00 agent. And then what you can do is then you can have another James Bond movie. And then suddenly, instead of massacring one single franchise character, you've now got two franchise characters. You can make movies every other year with them. And guess what? Then you could have a crossover movie, 007 and 008 together. And then that would be like your own little, it's literally what people are trying to do and force in stuff like the Spider-Man universe that Sony's trying to make, or the Dark Universe that Universal was trying to come into with the Universal Monsters. You have that at your feet. So why change a character when you can make another character and just give her own movies? It's sort of like what happened with the Ghostbusters. I didn't have a problem with the idea of a female Ghostbusters, but to approach the movie as saying, hey, we're going to have female Ghostbusters, I'm like, well, now you're stunt casting at that point. Now you're making it kitschy and trendy and all that nonsense that I want to see a good story. I want to see if that's something that works in the franchise, not something that fits your wannabe demographic of political correctness or forward thinking in movies. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to hit, I actually covered an earlier trailer of this, but it kind of fascinates me, this franchise, and I'm curious to see where this goes, and that is Terminator Dark Fate. Just dropped a new trailer in the last couple weeks. It opens on November 1st, but here's what they've got now running in theaters.
You may have changed the future, but you didn't change our fate.
I know you're scared, but I'm here to protect you.
I've never seen one like you before. Almost human.
I am human. Just enhanced.
I can see you're very upset. I'm going to help you protect the girl.
I have yet to see anything about this movie that really, really jazzes me to go see it. I mean, there's nothing about this movie, aside from it just being, oh, hey, it's another Terminator movie, it might be fun. The idea of saying, oh, we brought James Cameron back as a producer, well, that doesn't mean anything. James Cameron's produced some garbage in his life. That doesn't mean this is going to be a good movie. I think they're really just milking the Sarah Connor is old card a lot in this one. I'm not a big fan of, Mackenzie Phillips or whatever her name is who plays the enhanced human Terminator. I mean, it's neat to see Arnold back, but I mean, at a certain point, you're like, you know, either completely do a brand new thing or abandon this franchise because it's almost getting pathetic. I'm going to go see it. I'm curious about it, but there's just really nothing that's grabbing me here. The next one I want to hit is The Aeronauts, which opens on December 6th.
Gentlemen, to predict the weather could save hundreds of thousands of lives.
We are scientists, not fortune tellers.
Prove them wrong, James.
I'm a really good aeronaut. I want to use what I'm good at.
Women don't belong in balloons.
Miss Wren, I need to make studies of the air.
I'm not a coachman for hire.
You are the only person who could fly us higher than anyone has ever been. So will you?
Like all the Netflix titles that are coming out now and in the next couple months, this is an award film that's going to be in theaters as well as debuting on Amazon Prime pretty early in its run. Now, it's, of course, trying to get some Academy Award buzz, mainly because you've got Felicity Jones and Eddie Redmayne sharing the screen again. They, of course, last time worked together in The Theory of Everything, which was the Stephen Hawking biopic. This one actually looks kind of interesting. I mean, it looks kind of thrilling. The only thing I hope that we don't get is I hope we don't get every single line that Felicity Jones says has to be like, I'm a woman, I can do what I want. Fine, establish that, establish the sexism of the time and move on and then develop the character. But if she's got to keep reminding everybody that she's a woman and she's capable, two or three times in a movie, that's plenty before it gets ludicrous. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Goldfinch and Tigers Are Not Afraid. And welcome back. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. Well, I mean, the first one's not a review. I have to admit, this is one. Let's play the trailer first, and then I'll kind of talk about the sordid history of this film. The Goldfinch. A boy's mother is killed in a museum bombing, and he keeps an infamous painting in her memory.
In Amsterdam, I dreamt I saw my mother again. Same beautiful pale blue eyes.
This is the one I was talking about.
When I lost her, I lost sight of any landmark that might have led me someplace happier.
You're the boy whose mother was killed.
This was originally a Pulitzer Prize winning novel. And I think it came out in like 2014. So it's relatively recent. It's within the last decade, at least. I mean, I think it was only like 5 years ago that it was published. And of course, it was one of those that they said, ooh, let's make a movie out of it. They got the guy who directed Brooklyn, which was a sweet little movie starring Saoirse Ronan. It's one of those books, is, from what I've heard, that it might be a difficult adaptation. And I think that's playing out, because this also showed at Venice. Joker came out of Venice with top honors and like an 8 minute standing ovation after the movie. And this one came out with like 40% Rotten Tomatoes. And it's been going down since. Now, this has gotten screened in some markets, but it was not screened regionally. It was not screened for me anywhere near where I live, which is a bad sign. I mean, it's one thing if like a Tyler Perry movie doesn't get screened, you expect that. But a movie like this, based on a Pulitzer Prize winning book, that is being set up to knock across the plate during award season, this is exactly what this movie should be. And then you watch it, it's got beautiful cinematography. But watching the trailers, you know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of that movie, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which was also done by Warner Brothers. And that was, gosh, almost 10 years ago. And that was a story about this kid whose father gets killed in 9/11, and then he's going to try and track down a mystery that the father had left. And when you watch the trailers for that movie, just every second the trailer drips with, this is so significant, this is so artistic, this is so pretentious. And then they have scenes where they're like, you must find love and beauty in the crevices and the cracks of the world, and they're talking poetically. If you watch the trailers that they have, they're like, there's one guy there, he looks like he's working on like a desk or table, and he's talking about the beauty of the wood. I mean, it's just reeks of self-importance, and that it's coming out there saying, we know we're the most significant movie that's going to come out this year. You better go watch it. And if you don't agree with us, you're a Luddite. That's the feeling I get from the trailers. And I remember I watched the trailer with my family, and I was prepping for the show, and I was watching it with my wife and my son. And I said, this thing looks terrible. And they're like, what? It looks great. I go, no, it looks terrible. And I broke it down. Why? Because it's trying too hard. And guess what? That's exactly what the reviews are. What also makes it notable is they didn't have Thursday night showings of this movie. Most movies, even if they don't screen them, they open them Thursday night. You can go see them at 7 o'clock or something. Last week, It Chapter Two, I think they started at 5 o'clock because it was such a long movie. It's not uncommon. Most movies will do that now because the digital projector, you don't have to get a union projectionist to do it. Just anyone can push buttons and make it happen. And those Thursday night showings are pretty standard. Very rarely do they have a movie not do that. So when they don't have a movie do that, usually they're trying to control the narrative. I mean, sometimes it's like it's a kid's movie that they assume the family audience is going to come out on Saturday and Sunday. So they don't feel it's worth putting into the early screenings. But generally, when they don't have it on Thursday nights, that's a bad sign. That means they're trying to hold back word of mouth. They're trying to have fewer and fewer people see it before the actual opening time. So they didn't even afford a chance to the average person to go see this early, let alone the critics. That's a terrible sign. This movie looks like it's beautifully shot, but oh my gosh, it just feels like it's milking every moment for everything, and just every single shot is a pretentious, hopeful Oscar clip. It just does not look good. But since they didn't screen it or even give me a chance to see it by showing it on Thursday nights, I'm going to have to give it a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film does not get a trailer, and that's because it's in Spanish. I can't play foreign language trailers. You don't know what they're saying. This show airs in places that have significant Spanish-speaking populations. I don't know if the translation, what comes off on screen, I'm just trusting what the person typed in. It could be something much more crass that you really shouldn't be broadcasting on the radio. So that's why I generally don't cover foreign films. They're a little harder to talk about on the terrestrial radio. But this one I think is interesting because it's getting a lot of buzz. And it's also available right now on Shudder. You can see it in limited theaters if you're lucky enough to have a theater that's showing it. But if you have a Shudder subscription, which is a streaming service that does horror movies, it's available on that too, right now. You can go watch it. But in Tigers Are Not Afraid, a group of homeless children in Mexico take on the gang members who killed their families with a little help from magic. I know that was a corny way of saying it, but if you leave out that magic business, it just sounds like it's this depressing human angst drama on the Mexican streets. And it's more than that. I mean, yeah, that's the story. It's these kids. There's a lot of kids that get homeless because of the drug war and assassination and kidnappings that happen. And then the children of the people that are killed or kidnapped, they just don't address them. And so you got a large population of children who are left on their own, we'll say, after an event. And in this one, it's this girl who looks like she's about 11, you know, maybe, and her mother is kidnapped. Her mother is taken, and she has these, what her teacher has told her, are three magic pieces of chalk she can use. And there's an essence following her, that there's something following her, something mystical and possibly dangerous. And it intervenes at times when they're trying to fight against these drug dealers. Basically, she ends up pairing up with a group of other kids, and then one of the kids from that one gets kidnapped by a gang, and they end up crossing these real ruthless criminals on the streets of Mexico. And it's a fascinating movie because it looks at something pretty horrendous from a child's point of view, and that naive child's point of view who grew up with this. So this is normal to the kids in this. It doesn't present itself as horrifying necessarily because that's all they really know. And as an adult, especially as a person living thousands of miles away from where this takes place, in a very safe neighborhood and in a safe location and with a house and a roof over my head and air conditioning and everything, I can watch this and see how horrible the things are going on with these kids. But the kids in the movie and the presentation from their point of view, that's just the way they live. That's just normal to them. And it's a beautiful little story about this girl having to grow up fast, but also clinging to the essence of what makes a child have that wonderment, but also wanting to find her mother and wanting to get some closure on that. And there's no solutions offered. It's just this little slice of their lives for this time throughout the movie. And they got some really interesting characterization and some really sweet moments. It's been heralded by Guillermo del Toro. And if you've seen some of his early work, like his old Mexican movies, like long before Pan's Labyrinth, although it has a lot of that connective tissue. So if you like del Toro's original early stuff, this is something to check out. It's a significant little movie and it's really worth seeing. I'm going to have to say that Tigers Are Not Afraid totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Hustlers and Empathy Incorporated.
Live fast, die young, bad girls, do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls, do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls, do it well.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the one that's probably going to be the big one this week. And that is Hustlers. A group of strippers in New York City start embezzling money from sleazy Wall Street raiders after the economy crashes in 2008.
I just want to take care of my grandma, maybe go shopping every once in a while.
These Wall Street guys, you see what they did to this country? They stole from everybody. Hardworking people lost everything. And not one of these douchebags went to jail.
It's like robbing a bank, except you get the keys. Are you in?
Jobs, please.
What if somebody calls the cops?
And says what?
I spent $5,000 at a strip club. Send help.
This movie is so bizarre to me because... not of the subject material, but kind of how it popped out of nowhere. I remember they dropped a trailer and people were like, oh, well, there's this trailer for this new movie. And then it got some early screenings and it actually got some good responses. But then I start looking at the responses by other critics and some people. And I think part of it is being pushed by like J-Lo fans. Like Jennifer Lopez is in this movie. And I think that there's this concerted push by her fan base to overhype the film, so it gets this big box office, particularly in its opening weekend. But I also see these film critics out there, and they're gushing over this movie. And here's the thing. It's not a bad movie. It's entertaining, and, you know, I mean, it's almost 2 hours, but it managed to hold things together, and the characters are okay for what it is. But it's not the greatest movie of the year. It is not Best Picture material at all. I heard somebody compare that line, and you actually hear it in the trailer I played, where Jennifer Lopez is, these guys stole this money, and they ripped off everyone in the world. We're just going to steal it back from them. Are you in? And somebody compared that to the character introduction of Goodfellas when he goes, all my life I wanted to be a gangster. And I'm like, not even close. Not even close. That's an okay scene in Hustlers, but that's an iconic scene. That is an anchor for the entire movie of Goodfellas and an entire genre almost. Gangster movies of the 1990s, that's sort of one of the pinnacle lines that everything can come down from. So you don't get that in Hustlers. So I think there's a degree of overhyping this movie. And you get that sometimes when people are like, they realize a movie's better than it should be. And then everybody rushes to be the first one out there with the most extreme, the most hyperbolic, the most attention-grabbing quote that they can throw on Twitter. And then when the movie likes it, or God, if Jennifer Lopez were to retweet it, people are like, oh my God, super famous. Adjacent. Here's the reality with the movie Hustlers. It's an okay little heist movie, but it's full of problems. Part of the thing, this is one of my pet peeves in movies, is when they do a movie about strip clubs and it's clear that the people making the movie have never actually been in a strip club in their life. Now, this one's relatively close to reality in certain aspects. I do like the fact that they do show how much the house takes, because dancers don't just get to keep their tips and the money for the dances. They actually pay what's called like a stage fee, and they have to pay like $120 just to work that night, and they got to make that money back. And that's why they push the private dances and that stuff so much in a strip club. And it shows the reality of that. And yes, there's sleazy people in there, but there's also just people. Not everybody who goes in a strip club is some sleazy Wall Street prospector, but they kind of paint everybody with that brush. And it's like, oh, she makes a comment in one that shows it's either guys that are in an unhappy marriage or they're losers, essentially, or they're power-hungry monsters. And I'm like, there's a lot of people that go to studio. It comes and goes. Now, you get your regulars, that's a little bit different, and depending on the club, you know, but normal people go to studio. Guys go to strip clubs. It happens, and it doesn't mean that your life is on the skids or anything like that. The other thing is they have this scene where she comes out, Jennifer Lopez comes down and does this dance, never takes off any clothes whatsoever, and I'm like, okay, well, generally you don't hit people tipping thousands of dollars just to see somebody dance around in a bikini. It's not Flashdance. This is not Burlesque, the movie. This is guys wanting to see skin. And if you just dance around and swing around a pole, you're not going to make money. So they overplay that. And then there's scenes where guys are standing up, hooting, hollering, throwing dollar bills on stage. Guys don't do that in a strip club. Guys in a strip club all look like they're watching a physics lecture. Very rarely do you get the guy who comes up. And I've been to clubs, you know, for research purposes before. But, and I've been to clubs and I've seen, once or twice, I've seen a guy do the whole money, throw a bunch of bills on a girl. And usually it's like considered really sleazy by everybody. Now the girl likes it because she gets the money and the other girls get a little envious, but usually it's the sleazier patrons and the sleazier dancers that happens to, at least in my experience. The other thing is they make this sound like, oh, this club, it was a great way to make money and we never had to do anything. And they have this whole sequence where like we bring the Wall Street whales in the back and they go to the one room, back room that has no cameras, and they drop $10,000 to $15,000 and they show them and they have like Jennifer Lopez and Constance Wu doing their little dance. And they're like, oh, do you want us to take off our bra? And I'm like, generally, for the super rich whales that come in and drop $10,000 to $15,000 in the back room, they're not just looking at you to take off your top. They, the more happens, and they make it sound like, oh, after 2008, then these Russian models came in and started doing the happy ending stuff. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that was happening in that thing. But that was part of my problem is for a movie like this to work, you gotta like the characters, and you can't have the characters be too sleazy. You can't have the main character be too sleazy. So constantly, well, she's like, I need to take care of my grandma, and I just need to pay the rent. And oh, I only go back here, and nothing ever happens. Weird. You know, I was like, no, there are those that happen. The ones that make a lot of money tend to do that, and that stuff happens, and it's always happened, and it didn't take a Wall Street crash for that to start showing up in strip clubs in New York City. So it's, I don't know, this movie itself has some decent moments, and but at the same time, you're like, you have no sympathy for these characters, because when they're getting the money and they're running their scams, they're buying fur coats, and they, you know, women be shopping and all that stuff. She's like, oh, I need to help my grandmother, but I'm also going to buy all these Louis Vuitton. And I mean, it just, and in a certain degree, it is sort of sleazy, completely shallow, superficial female characters. So it, as opposed to the shallow, superficial, sleazy men characters in there. The movie has a lot of problems, but it's an enjoyable movie. It's an entertaining movie, but it is absurd. It's as absurd as a Magic Mike movie, but there's not much reality to it. And I don't, you know, even though it's based on a true article that came out, I have a feeling that the source material, i.e. the strippers who are doing the interviews, made themselves look a little bit better than they really were. So I'm going to have to say, I'm going to give it the kind of rocks simply because it was entertaining, but it's not great.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Empathy Inc. for a second, or Empathy Incorporated. A venture capitalist tries to rebuild his career by arranging investments in a virtual reality company.
Walk a mile in the shoes of less fortunate, and when you wake up, no matter what problems you have in your real life, feel that much better.
It's a startup, Joel.
It's a work in progress.
Anything could go wrong.
But what if it went really well?
It's called XVR, and it's realer than anything anybody's ever seen.
Joel, you need to call the police.
If they find out that I know, that money is gone.
I told you.
Get out!
We needed to have guards. I told you we needed to hit pause on this thing.
Would you move?
You didn't listen to me, and you left me to do all the dirty work.
This is a tiny film. It is a small film, and it started open last week in, I think, New York and LA, and it's expanding to minor theaters around the country now, and you can also get it on demand. But it's one that you may want to check out. The reason this is impressive is because, of course, it deals with one of my favorite things of like, oh, here's this new technology. It's going to help people out. What could possibly go wrong? And while it does have this pretentious level where it's shot in black and white, it's shot on video, but they convert it to black and white. And I'm like, that's a little pretentious. But still, the movie itself has very high concepts, and it's an intricate science fiction piece and a true science fiction piece in the sense that you can't remove the technology. If a real science fiction piece is if you remove the science fiction aspect, you have no story. Inception is a great example. You remove the idea that people could project themselves into someone's dreams. You don't have a story for that film. That film doesn't work. This one is that way. It's laced in there, but there's very minimal special effects. It's done on the cheap, but it doesn't look cheap. It looks like a small independent film, but it looks also realistic. It looks very gritty and underground-ish, and that is kind of cool. And the other thing, it doesn't suffer from certain acting and filmmaking tropes that tend to burden really low-budget filmmaking. It holds it together really well. It's an impressive movie. For how small it is. Now, it's not perfect. It has some goofy things to it, but still, this is a movie to seek out. So I'm going to have to say that Empathy Inc. totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the box office and the home cinema roundup featuring Aladdin and The Dead Don't Die.
Let the midnight special shine.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the box office before we move on to the home cinema elements. Last week, as expected, It Chapter 2 topped the box office. Now, it didn't do as well as people were predicting. And here's the thing. This is the tough part about box office and whether or not something's a success. It Chapter 2 made $91 million at the box office last weekend. By all other measures, that is an unprecedented success. That is the second highest weekend gross in September ever. And I would imagine adjusted for inflation, it's still way up there topping the list. Because September is always a notoriously bad time for box office. You usually don't get anything opening with much more than 20 million in September. For a 3-hour horror movie that's rated R, that is phenomenal. The problem is, everyone's comparing it to the first film, which was 123 million, and that movie, nobody expected it to make that much. So everyone's going to compare it to this one. And so, yeah, it opened with 30 million less, but it's a franchise of a horror film, and it was a 3-hour movie, so it's a longer movie, and it also was dealing with some, let's just say, less than awesome reviews. It still got good reviews, but it wasn't as good as. So the expectations were around 100 million, but it came in underneath that. And the problem, that's what's so insane about Hollywood, is they're now painting this $91 million as, well, it opened soft. It's like, are you kidding me? It broke even its opening week. This movie is a runaway, unprecedented success already. But it's not as big of a success as the last film. I mean, the next closest movie was Angel Had Fallen with like 6 million. It basically gobbled up most of the box office of this past week. Unless it has an unprecedentedly huge drop this weekend, and if, say, Hustlers unprecedentedly overperforms, this is probably going to be the top box office this weekend as well. I mean, it may drop. The first one dropped like over 60%, and that's not uncommon for a horror movie. Horror movies tend to drop pretty steeply. The Hustlers is getting some good traction. It might do well, but I don't expect Hustlers to make $60 million or something like that. So we'll see. I'll be curious to see how well the legs of it are and how well it does internationally. But it's still going to be a big hit this weekend, and it's made its money for the studio, and everything else beyond this point is just great. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The first one I want to hit is a familiar title, Aladdin. Will Smith stars as a genie who helps a young street rat achieve his dream.
Watch this.
Watch out! You done wound me up! You ain't never had a friend like me!
Hey, can you make me a prince?
There is a lot of gray area in make me a prince.
You look like a prince on the outside. I didn't change anything on the inside.
I remember doing my review a couple months ago when this came out in theaters, and going back and looking at it, it's a fine, okay movie. It's not fantastic, and it's certainly not necessary, but none of these remakes are, really. But it's better than something like Dumbo, even though Dumbo took more risks. And it gives you a slightly different interpretation than, say, The Lion King, which was a shot-for-shot remake, essentially. So, I mean, Aladdin, I wasn't a huge fan, but, you know, I think it's fine for what it is. And the Blu-ray has enough stuff. The thing with Disney is they do often give you a good amount of stuff on the Blu-ray, especially for a big release like this. And they have some decent bonus features. A lot of it's behind the scenes video, and they have like a deleted song and a whole bunch of deleted scenes and bloopers, music videos. Look at Guy Ritchie. You always forget that Guy Ritchie directed this movie. For some reason, he is the least memorable name associated with this film. But I mean, it's fine. If you're a fan, if you've seen the movie and you like it, yeah, get it for your library. You know, it's good. It doesn't hold a candle to the original though. And that one, in case you don't have it already, that one's also available on DVD and Blu-ray. They just came out with the Signature Collection. It's basically their big classic stuff like Pinocchio and Snow White and Seven Dwarves and Beauty and the Beast. And it has some new bonus features. And of course, the original movie's the best. And it's the gold standard. It's what you can't hold a candle to with this new movie. And the new one, because they've released it on DVD and Blu-ray a couple times already. So you've got all those classic bonus features, but you've also got a couple extra things. You got like an alternative ending bits to that. And there's, they got a sing along version to it. And a look at some of the voices. So you have some minor new special features, but I mean, if you already got the older DVD or Blu-ray, well, if you don't have the older DVD, might as well get it on Blu-ray because it's high definition. It comes with digital code and everything. So you can get a 1-2 punch of the original Aladdin and the remake of Aladdin. Those are both available. And, of course, the original totally rocks, but, the remake, I'm only going to give it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Dead Don't Die. This is a movie that came out earlier this summer and kind of blipped. No one really saw it. It didn't make a huge splash with horror audiences, but it's now available on Blu-ray and DVD, so let's revisit it really quickly. Jim Jarmusch tries his hand at zombie films with this tale of the undead rising and attacking a small town in Pennsylvania.
This is really awful. Maybe the worst thing I've ever seen.
What was it, wild animals?
So what are you thinking?
I'm thinking zombies.
What?
You know, the undead. Ghouls.
You look gorgeous.
Flesh-eating zombies.
Don't joke, it's really, really creepy.
Oh, man, this isn't gonna end well.
This has some really interesting stuff. I'm real hot and cold with this movie. I there's parts of it that I think are really kind of fun, particularly the performances. Bill Murray and Adam Driver, they deliver such deadpan lines perfectly, and they play off each other very well, doing very similar things. And that's really tough to do from a comedy standpoint, is if both people are doing kind of the same delivery. That's why, like, you always had Abbott and Costello had such totally different deliveries. Classic comedy teens, Laurel and Hardy, they were very different guys and very different deliveries. But Adam Driver and Bill Murray play off each other really well, both giving these just very deadpan, straightforward deliveries. And that actually works. There's also just a really interesting performance by Tilda Swinton in this movie as this Scottish funeral home director that had wandered into town, but as bizarre as you'd expect from a Tilda Swinton character. The troubles this movie has is the fact that Jim Jarmusch isn't a horror movie director. It's clear he's seen zombie movies. And I remember I said this about American Horror Story, because I'm not a big fan of that. And especially when American Horror Story first started, I remember saying it feels like that was made by somebody who's seen horror movies and is mimicking them, but really doesn't understand horror movies. And I kind of feel the same way about The Dead Don't Die. It's like Jarmusch is trying to do his hand at zombie movies, but he's not experienced doing them and maybe hasn't really immersed himself in it. He explains too much. There's a whole scene where you have this hobo or this guy who lives in the woods narrating and just throwing out every cliche and saying every cliche that zombies could represent. And I'm like, well, now you're just being too heavy-handed. Now at this point, you're explaining yourself when you don't need to. The genre's been dissected and deconstructed so much over the years, you don't have, this is very shallow analysis anyway. So they do some certain things with, especially with Adam Driver's character, where, you know, it gets kind of hyper real and self-aware at times. And that's clever, but it's just kind of a throwaway jokes at that time. So there's parts of this that I think are very effectively done and other parts that are just really, really clunky. So it's kind of a real hit or miss thing. And then the bonus on this is, you know, on the DVD and Blu-ray, there's like a bit about Bill Murray and there's a couple behind the scenes things, but nothing really huge. You don't get a ton of special features. So really what you're getting is the movie itself. And so if you like the film, if you want to check out the movie, it's interesting. And I, you know, got Halloween coming up. It's an interesting watch for October, but it does seem real clunky and incomplete at times. But I'm going to be nice. I think I gave it a worse review when I saw it in the theaters. I'm going to say for the DVD and Blu-ray, I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Other releases this week include John Wick 3, Parabellum, and Supernatural Season 14. And that is it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Ad Astra, Downton Abbey, and Rambo Last Blood. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.